Welcome to Rise to Offend, a podcast that exposes people who rose to offend in society and their legacy today. I'm your host, Petra Spych, and this week we are doing part two of three on the controversial anti-gang unit, the LAPD Crash Team. The acronym standing for Community Resource Against Street Hoodlums, a special team that was set up to combat the gang violence in the Rampart Division of Los Angeles, but would leave a legacy of corruption and criminal activity rivaling any known gangster organization, changing the view and trust of police officers and their roles in minority communities for generations. At this point, in 1987, after Operation Hammer and the success of the hip-hop group NWA, a line is drawn into the sand between the police and the counterculture of gangs, and many were siding against the police force as they tried to maintain peace by playing by the rules of the streets.
For example, Chuck D., you say he's stopped by a police officer because he's wearing gang attire, and then he says, but the police don't understand, and whites do not understand about black. And what I'm saying to you, Chuck, you don't understand how people in the black community feel about gang members and about people who wear that attire in their neighborhoods. They don't like it. They're terrorized by it. They're frightened by it. And they ask the police to come in and do something about it. And then when we do something about it, there are those in the community that say our actions are too harsh. Then you talk about black police officers. When a black puts on a police uniform, suddenly he's no longer black. He's treated as the enemy by the black community in many respects. And he feels that he's been totally dislocated from the group that he's trying to represent through affirmative action. We will not and have not dealt with this in a realistic way. There are perceptions out there. And as far as crime is concerned, let me just tell you, crime is heavy in black communities, and it's crime against blacks, black crime against black crime. You go to Los Angeles, if you're a Caucasian in Los Angeles, your chance of being murdered, very, very small. Your chance of being murdered if you're black are very big. If you're Hispanic, is very big. And to just deny that is nonsense.
Well, the question is why? Why?
I must say
I don't have all of the answers as to why, but it is a fact, and it builds perception. That's what Bill was talking about.
And joining me this week, Brennan Hahn and Jocelyn Sharp. Racial profiling was becoming an obvious method for the crash team, and African-Americans and Hispanics that would dress the part would be harassed and even arrested on charges that were questionable at best. The final stats for Operation Hammer would show over 50,000 minorities being arrested by the LAPD, giving more young black people records than during the 1965 Watts riots. Despite the large number of arrests in Operation Hammer, that's 50,000, by 1988, there was only 60 felony arrests, and charges were only filed on 32 of those arrests.
Well, I was involved with gangs when I went to Crenshaw High School, and when you got to that school, it was kind of like you either with us or without us. And down in the neighborhood, I mean, everybody is affiliated with gangs. Even little girls walk down the street, and somebody will say, well, what set lives here? And they'll say, well, this is the Crips, and this is the Bloods, and they know what their mama tells them, what color to wear. And it's something as you grow up, you just learn. So everybody from my neighborhood or down in South Central Los Angeles is affiliated with gangs. I was never a hardcore member that was like, let's go out and kill people. Mm-hmm. But I used to roll with the sets, and I know what makes them tick. You know what mm-hmm. I'm saying? I was just lucky, you know. I advanced from the gang life to be a hustler. I was like, well, the gang banging wasn't making no money back in them days. So I traded my sweatshirt for a silk shirt and was shaking dice on RTD, you know, throwing the three cards down, mm-hmm. trying to learn how to do that and stuff. So
were you ever heavily involved in crime? Did you make a living illegally?
I made a better living than most people in this audience, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. But I was involved with it, and I thought that was the only way to get paid, because there's a line that says, here's the establishment, you can't get in. Mm-hmm. Here's the underworld, no applications. And most black young brothers get in that mode. They feel like they can't make it in this world. Mm-hmm. And I was just like that. And I was out there getting paid.
The cops were the good guys, and the drug dealing gangsters were the bad guys on paper. But the tactics of trying to control a neighborhood that would embrace and glorify arrests and culturally get respect for violence would be unstoppable. The line in the sand is the cop and gangbanger, mostly of a minority descent. What options does a force that lost control, respect, and has crossed the line into obvious racial motives?
Police officers are the best we can find in this nation. We go through a tremendous process to select them. They are, by and large, wonderful people. To say there are not some brutal ones, yes, there are. To say there are not some racist, yes, there are. But there's a smaller percentage of brutal, racist police officers than there are brutal, racist people in the population as a whole, because we go through that fine selection process. And yet, you know, the police officers are hired by the people to do a job. And that job is becoming more difficult each and every year. It's a tough, tough job. It's more violent than ever before. Their families worried about them more than ever before. And a lot of that problem is centered in racial situations, where racist racial problems exist. And, you know, police officers become cynical. I will be the first to admit it. They become cynical because of what they see on the street. And if you think that the attitude of the population towards police officers is all candy and
you
roses, it is not.
I never said candy and roses.
I mean, they are
you
nasty.
The uniform that young blacks react to, and I said to you, it is not the uniform, it is the behavior.
Can you start over and solve the mishandling of the last 20 years of radical policing from the LAPD crash team?
It's going to take 50 years. Those memories are going to have to be bred out of the community, which means you have to make sure that the next generation doesn't have to go through that. And then their dad is telling them, hey, this happened to me back in the 80s. All right, this happened to your grandfather. Didn't happen to me, but it happened to your grandfather. Now all of a sudden, you're distancing yourself from this bad idea from the police. So it's like the more force that you put on these people, the more fear you put into these people. And they just decided to go with the lesser of two evils. And that was the street gangs.
Say the truth, sir. I just can't place it, man. I'm walking and I'm moving.
Just all got anything that can help us at all? How many dudes? What kinds of weapons? Did you hear automatic weapons? Did you hear anything? Or do you care? I didn't think you did. The lowest of the low are just as interesting and important to the community as the guy that's got all the big bucks. And all these little businessmen right now, they're being raped by these idiots. What's your gun? Come out here. Come on. Sit down on your ass as soon as you get out. Sit down on your ass as soon as you get out that door. You almost got your ass blown away. You understand that? You ever stick your hand up underneath your shirt and pull out a screwdriver? It looks like a gun to me. You almost died because you wanted some Twinkies, you jerk.
You realize that nobody ever wasn't scared of the police until this. Nobody outnumbered the police until this. There wasn't a blueprint to follow in a city to be like, this is how we can fix this problem.
They get harassed by the police for no reason, and everybody wants to say it, you know, but they can't say it on the spot because something happened to them, you know. And then in the ghetto or in a black community, you get harassed by the police just because what you wear, and 9 times out of 10, you can't help but what you got on because that's all your family can afford you to wear. But they, you know, stereotype you as a gang member, so that's how it is. Yeah. You know?
Now, so you're not saying that all police are bad?
Nah.
Not all police.
90% or more. Yeah. It's 10%. It's 10% that's good, but that 90% just give you that edge to that 10%. When you see them, you just click, you know? Word so up. We did it on the records. That's how we're getting back at them for getting back at us for all them years. We couldn't do nothing.
Yeah.
Because it's a million times, you know, I used to get harassed in front of my house. My mother come out, and she, like, asked him what's going on. And they tell her to shut up or something, or stay out of it, you know? And I ain't got that right to do that, you know? They just like me. If they didn't have that gun, it'd be, you know?
I think it's more than 10%, though. There might be.
I ain't saw where I came from. Yeah. Where I come from, it's like no percent. No percent.
Yeah.
I don't even feel for them, okay. You know? Because they don't feel for me. They don't feel for a lot of black like youths in the community. What?
Back in the day, a cop would be like, you know, a cop would say, hey, stop that. Like, yo, shut up, nerd. Now, these people are legitimately terrified of them, is what you're saying.
Well, they'll shoot at the cops.
Yes.
They don't care. Again, with the stats, 350 officers, right? 450 active gangs, okay? and over 300,000 residents. They're outnumbered. They're outgunned. They don't have options. They almost have to play by the streets rules to survive. They can get overrun at any moment.
Get your butt home.
Thank you very much.
Where you get in more trouble than already is.
I have another.
See ya. There's a curfew. Okay. Dawn till dusk. You're eligible to go to jail. Okay?
My brother.
I'm making that perfectly clear. Am I making myself perfectly clear? Okay.
Clear.
Have a nice evening.
My brother. Did I do anything wrong?
Yes, you're out on the street past curfew. That's what you're doing wrong.
I think the community wants to have its city back, and I think they're going to stop this crap. And I think they're going to get back down to business of, speaking their voices and making a statement, but in some other means. Hopefully. Hopefully.
So how does the police, who have people in corporate offices, like when you guys say you don't want to get to white America, well, corporate police officers don't want those officers to get to their fucking offices, right?
Right.
It's the same game. So they are in the same situation, in essence, being told this is what you have to do. So what is a blueprint for this to not explode into a wildfire?
It's sad because it's just like when you watch people argue on Facebook and post all these and post their opinions. You're not helping your side. It's almost best to stay quiet and back away. But unfortunately, if you're one of the police officers, you're going to back away and people die. You know what I mean? People die within these neighborhoods.
First of all, I like to say, you know, just to talk about the police thing just for one quick second, is the situation is rotten at the core. Nobody's just making a total scapegoat of the police. It's just that they come in after the situation is already bad and even getting worse, and they even come in and make it worse. If you don't have control over your economic situation, which means if the black community can't support itself and you have enough black businesses and you have young people coming up knowing that they could support a business or have a future in having a business to make the community go around or even have an understanding of business, then that's one thing that's needed, because people wouldn't come up and young people wouldn't be making up their own rules. Number two is an educational curriculum that has to be there. I mean, and it has to be updated. For example, we talk about affirmative action. Affirmative action has to be updated. What's important for black people, control and self-empowerment, is something that people need to know, and they need to be taught at an early age, even in the high schools.
Well, the one thing that I do not like when people defend gangsters, and what options do they have? Let's talk about the mother of the kid that got shot that wasn't a gangster, that was just walking by somebody's house, and they caught a bullet in the back of the head by a drive-by. That kid never gets brought up.
Never.
Never gets
Tupac
brought up.
Tupac Shakur is a legend,
yes.
Right? He got in an altercation, someone shot and killed a little girl, 6-year-old girl, right? That's never part of his
legacy. Never bring that up.
It's not brought up, right?
Well,
this altercation that led to this child's death. Nobody knows that child's fucking name.
Well, because people either want you to be a perfect martyr or no martyr at all.
But despite being banned in many places, NWA sold 3 million copies of their Straight Outta Compton album. Their message that cops abused them when they were growing up hit home with a lot of people.
5 white guys walking together are friends. 5 black guys walking together is a gang in the police eyes. You know what I'm saying? And they have you like this and head down and you be on the concrete.
Nothing such as this has ever happened in Compton. It doesn't happen.
California's politicians were furious that NWA's songs encourage violence against other blacks, against cops, and they accused him of trying to incite crime. Ice Cube's response to me that day.
Somebody wanted to do a crime, they had that mentality there anyway. It wasn't our album which turned somebody that was a nice kid into this vicious criminal.
In 1989, there was a firm belief from some people about the real motive for the foul, violent songs from NWA.
I don't think they have black pride. I think they have green pride, and that's all that they're thinking about.
This time, Ice Cube and the gang agreed.
So you're doing it for the money?
Yes. Yeah. All this is for the money. We ain't gonna do no records, you know, that's all off, and we think nobody's gonna buy.
In order to believe you're better than other people, you have to believe that people aren't all inherently the same amount of flawed. And that's the problem in our society, is that people want to think everyone wants to know where they lay in the hierarchy of society. If we were a caste system, where am I? That's what we really desire as people. That's what we're all reaching for, you know, sociologically, you know, in our lives. But at the end of the day, we're all the same. We are all capable of the same things.
With that mentality, though, can't you look at the police officers that this is survival for them?
That's what I'm getting at. I mean, it's like
So they're victims, too.
But what I'm saying is, though, is just like their idea was, okay, we're going to put the fear of God into these gangsters. Now,
no, that's the method of cops.
That was the method of cops. We're going to put the fear.
To be effective.
Yes. We're going to put the fear of God in these gangsters. But now, in essence, they put fear into themselves because now these gangsters are super pissed. Now they're firing on the police officers. They're not scared. Going to jail is a badge of honor now. All the things that these cops would use to keep people in their place is working against them now because they pushed too far.
Institutional racism is at the foundation of the American criminal justice system, and it permeates police culture. There's not a major urban police department. There's not dealing with issues of institutional racism. I decided to leave the police department because I was profoundly disillusioned with the United States criminal justice system and the racism at its foundation and the impact that has nationally on communities of color everywhere, black and brown communities. Historically, black officers, Latino officers, minority officers have not held enough positions of power and authority in terms of rank, in terms of administration, to protect themselves when they challenge the culture, when they challenge the system. And retribution is usually swift and is very real. One of the first things that you heard from your training officer or the officers around you was, forget that BS they just told you in the academy. We're going to show you how to be the police. Forget all of that political correctness and all of that, you know, other stuff. Here's how we get down.
Well, those cops are victims of their higher ups, bad planning and internalized racism, because the plan only, all it did was add heat to a pan of mold. You just made it worse.
Yes.
Literally, mold is the best example because mold can't live without food. And all the crash team did was create food for the gangs, the mold of the gangs. It just let it grow. It only solidified things. So both the police were victims of poor education, internalized racism within the criminal justice system, and their own human fear, you know?
And on top of that, too, they were also victim of being a soldier. Do this.
Yeah.
You got it. Yeah. Listen to soldiers in war. You think they come back and they're stoked that they shot a five-year-old that was coming
Burn
at him with a machine gun?
Down.
Yeah.
Yeah. They just do it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like they're not stoked. There's a reason why these guys come back fucked up.
Yeah.
One of the things I'd like to say, it is not the uniform, it is the behavior, and I don't think we should crowd the issue. It is the behavior. No one is questioning a police officer, whether he's black or white, because he has on the uniform. It is the behavior
that is in question. And I will tell you, that's not true. And you can talk to black police officers. They will tell you how difficult it is for them to operate.
If they take on the behavior of white police officers, then is the question.
You know, in Los Angeles, we have a very well integrated police department, extremely well integrated. Believe it or not, I brought more blacks into the police department. I was told what you need to do is bring in more blacks, more diversity into your department. I did that. More women, more than any other chief in the United States. We still have the problems. The problems still exist
It is a behavior.
You say that, but I go out on the street, I watch police officers operate day in and day out, and I will tell you the behavior that you describe or that you're alluding to is not there.
The motto, if you can't beat them, join them, would start to infect many of the team members. And as they saw the lavish and luxurious lifestyle of many of these gangsters, the police would start to get jealous and upset. But overall, racism would start to breed the force and the people.
Well, let me just put it like this. I don't know anything that could be said that would put our minds at ease. We might be looking at what might be done. I think something done might give us a new willingness to try to reconsider our position. Because one of the things that we raised in these meetings, and I think you should know that, is that we have offered to help. We do not feel that we have gotten much help from the district attorney's office or from the police department in terms of our willingness to help try to break down some of these problems and the confrontation relationship that seems to exist between the department and our community. And frankly speaking, I mean, we have always had the position that we were willing to work when there was an opportunity to work. We offered certain suggestions, such as some kind of broad-based community committee that evaluated officers who were going to work in our communities so that we could have something really serious to say, more than just, I'm not talking about one person on a committee where actually your voice or the weight of your vote is very limited, but I'm talking about a committee that is specifically of the community itself, designed to help this department evaluate who they send into our communities. And I think that the department is basically afraid of that kind of approach. I mean, and we took the position that the police officer is an individual who comes out of the community to serve the community and to protect the community, and therefore there's no reason that there should be any fear of that relationship between the community and the officer.
How does racism come into play if you are a police officer and can't seem to help or change a community that is in peril? So in essence, if you can't do your job, are you going to blame it because that guy's black and you're white?
There's so many ways that you can point that. You can look at it as...
For this generation, that was a very easy scapegoat.
Yes, it was. But what I'm getting at, though, is, you know, at this point, too, there were black cops in the 80s and the 90s. So you're working with some of these guys as well. So I'm looking at it like, you know, when you're looking at a gangster and you're looking at somebody who clearly doesn't care about the consequences of their own actions, that is scary. You have to... What do you do to take that guy down? What do you do? There's nothing you can do. You know, the only thing you can do is kill him. That is it. And then he ends up becoming a martyr.
MS started in Ramport, but they branched out like a tree. They branched out. They got cliques everywhere now. To us, those guys at that time were the worst of the worst, and we weren't going to let them take us out. So we had to come up with a system that worked for us, and that system was corrupt. But when you start doing it and you start talking to victims, who are afraid, who don't want to press charges, who had just been robbed, or the daughter just got raped, or one of the families just got killed, but those family members are afraid to file reports on them. They want to tell us, but they don't want to take action, and then they expect us to do something about it.
Well, I mean, there's this generational racism thing to think of, though, that the fact that people of color ended up in ghettos and in gang-ridden neighborhoods and poverty-stricken neighborhoods because of lack of opportunity based on the color of their skin. So there's this generational thing where your grandparents thought that, you know, people of color were scum because they were pushed into these scummy neighborhoods and they had to do scummy jobs and it made them be viewed as scum. And then your parents thought they were scum because their kids were scum. They were the kids of scum. And then we had to go to school with these scummy pieces of shit. And so there's this generational racism where even if it's 1985 and you're this great cop, you probably are still a little racist if you're white.
Black people today and in the past been trying to settle matters like this with, like, non-violent, right? But they ain't getting nowhere. So the only way you can do it is with violence.
Can't take no more.
Whatever, like, you gotta do the same thing they doing to you. Everybody, like, when white officers, they was violent, everybody else wanna get violent. Everybody trying to be violent against young black males, so they, like, everybody tired of it, and they finna just retaliate. Ain't nobody taking it no more. Even if they got to die for the cause, I think that's what they're going to do.
Well, and on top of that, too, every cop will tell you this. If you are a cop, regardless of color, and you go into a black neighborhood, you are getting called to see the worst that neighborhood has. Mm-hmm. It's not like, hey, these kids are selling lemonade. Oh, let me go over there and get a cup. No, you were called for a reason. So your view of people is completely skewed because all you're seeing is that negative aspect of it. I don't necessarily think...
The negative aspect of a race, the negative aspect of a culture,
yes,
will make you judge them.
Right.
If that's all you see.
If that's all you see.
That's your day-to-day. If we saw a racist person every single day, right? We would be like, fuck, I don't want to be around people like him. And then you would look at him, how he looks, the color of his skin, and then associate that with other people like him.
Nothing has happened. It's new. America has always been about this. I myself have been attacked by police officers many a time, and I'm quite sure there are millions of other black people, as well as white people, as well as Asian people in this country that have been attacked by police officers. But this is something that's happening even right now as we speak. there's a police officer beating on some kid right now.
It's the same thing when you see somebody wearing a sporting a political bumper sticker.
Yeah.
You immediately go, okay, you are gladly accepting the negative views that come along with that sticker. Not just the positives. You're gladly taking that. You're telling somebody that disagrees with you, fuck you, this is where I stand.
But I also think this has a lot more to do with, the racism was there, and of course there were true and total racists during this time. But I also think that the racism was an easy scapegoat to distance yourself from. I'm nothing like these people. Anytime, I would never be anything like these people.
And that's always been the problem with racism, too, is it's too easy. It's too easy to fall into that trap. You know, and unfortunately, when these cops are seeing gangsters and drug dealers and pimps and crackheads, they're not getting called out for the kid that just graduated high school. Hey, go give this kid a high five. All right, now carry on with your business. No, they're seeing only the worst.
Well, let's not forget this was a time when hate crimes were happening daily and we did not even classify them as hate crimes.
I think hate crimes is a joke. It's stupid. Yeah.
But you know what I mean? Like if you're killing somebody because of racism, it wasn't a deal in the 80s. That wasn't part of the discussion.
Well, my thing is though, if you're killing somebody because of racism, it's murder regardless.
Oh, of course.
You have to
Motive doesn't matter.
You killed somebody, get the fuck off the street.
You got, like, people out in the community now, right? Mm-hmm. It's like a fad, all the black power stuff. It's like a fad right now. And it's a lot of people that know what's going on, but then there's people that don't know what's going on. You know what?
They just want to wear the black medallions because everybody else is wearing
it. They faking it. And we just address that, like, if you don't know what you're talking about, shut up. Don't even wear it if you don't know.
This is how we feel about it. If you got a light bill and your neighbor has a light bill, whose light bill you going to take care of first? You going to take care of home first.
Yeah, because it's too many problems over here for them to be trying to worry about over there. In the first place, they don't know what they're talking about. So, you know, get home straight.
Word up.
Quit faking. Take the medallions off if you don't know what they mean. He said they are overnight black men.
Overnight black men.
So when our government is working real hard to help South Africa, you think they should help Compton first, is what you're saying?
Not only Compton.
They should help everywhere.
Not only Compton. Mm-hmm. You know?
Because all this this crisis in the Gulf, all that's bull to me. Politics, you know, they making money off all that.
After years of dissent between community and protectors of the community, racial tension would build, and the police profiling and targeting non-whites would be a part of day-to-day culture and lessons for many minorities.
What do you think the mentality of the police department is as it goes into an area?
It's them against us. They're not there to work with people. They are there. They feel that the people in a certain community is the enemy, and so there's a confrontation right from the beginning.
And then on March 3rd, 1991, those beliefs would not only be shown justification, but in a violent and brutally ugly manner. An African-American motorist by the name of Rodney King. Rodney King would go out drinking, and on his way home, going at a high rate of speed, would try and outrun police because he was drunk and a DUI arrest was a violation of his parole. He would go from 55 to 80 miles per hour in residential areas, and a police chopper would be sent out to find him. After an 8-mile pursuit throughout residential neighborhoods, King would be pulled over and beaten severely, and this would be caught on video.
We're still on the plantation, because when you have a community that you can call your own, you have control over the economic situation and the development of economic situations. You have control over the educational curriculum that's able to teach your people and protect them from an environment that's really been foreign to them all along. And you have control over a situation where you can police your own people and you have the right to enforce your own laws. That don't exist in black communities. So it ain't a black community. And that Los Angeles was one situation that was caught on camera. That year where I was touring around the country in 80 cities, 80 markets, and all of them are black, where we go around and tour on that particular year, you know, I found out about 5 similar incidents about police brutality. So what it was, like I said before, is a powder keg where people say, oh, I can relate to that, and it's getting to the point. If you think it's crazy now, L.A. is something that happened. But you got Atlanta, you got Kansas City, you got St. Louis, you got Chicago, New York ain't sure about itself, Philly, Miami, you know, you're talking about if these things don't get, you know, at least brought to a table, such as a forum, which is a good place to start, you're going to have some problems in the next 2 years. And the problem is also is that white people don't know enough about how we feel, and white community, and I'm talking about a large majority, don't know how we think, but we're forced to figure out how white people think and live and how they feel. We're educated on white, but white's not educated on us.
Despite the dangerous actions of Rodney King, the beatings showed a normalcy of brutality against African Americans and the LAPD. What does this show the world, despite them not having the full story?
Anytime you show a video, anytime you put something up, is the only thing that resonates. It's the only thing. You're seeing it with your own eyes. This is happening. This is really happening. The before didn't make it into the video, but all we got to do is focus on what is happening right now. And what did we see in that video? We saw one guy get the shit kicked out of him by people wearing a badge that is supposed to represent safety, represent protection. You're beating the shit out of this guy.
With weapons.
With nightsticks.
Excessively.
You hear people that try to defend the cops. They're like, he was on meth and he was running for his life and you weren't there. And I get that. I understand where frustration could take over. But that situation happened only because it escalated. That situation happened because that's all the cops knew how to handle shit now. They knew that these people understand pain. They knew these people understood what it felt like to have a stick over their head. And that's the only way they're going to listen. Not true at all, but that's what they were taught.
I think it has been devastating to the image of this city and especially to our police department.
It's very apparent that some, not all, but some of those officers are clearly out of control, and they have to ultimately be willing to take a good hard look at the leadership of the department.
Well, in statistical improbability that the one time it was caught on camera was the one time this is the way they handled that situation is astronomical. This is probably the way they handled every situation.
That's what people that take the cop side in this situation, that's what they're missing. That's what they always miss. Now, again, do I look at the cops in a sense of there is a little bit of victimhood there? Because, again, they were taught this. They were taught to be like this. So at one point you look at the cops, you go, look, I understand the frustration part. I understand the fact that you did fear for your safety, but there was also seven other guys with you with sticks. I think you could have handled one guy, high on meth or not. You could have wrestled him to the ground, put his hands behind him and cuffed him and threw him in the back of the vehicle. But you wanted to send a message.
Well, first of all, this is a department that this council has supported over and over again. This is a police department that has supported you, each of you. And I just tell you this, if you don't speak out on behalf of the men and women of the Los Angeles Police Department that have served the people of this city well, if you don't do that at this crucial moment in our history, then I'm going to tell you, you're going to have a police department that is not going to be the kind of department that you want, the kind of department that people deserve. Mr. Wu.
Thank you. I want to know, did you mean that as a threat? In other words, that if I or other members of the council are going to be criticizing you or the department, are you saying that you will withhold support of these services to fight crime in our districts?
That is the most insulting thing I have heard on this council floor in all the time I've been here, and I've been here a lot longer than you've been alive. Absolutely not. This is a professional organization. What do you think we are?
And to your point, it's the plausible deniability thing up to this point, right? It's easy to hear the news and be like, oh, there's a lot of police brutality in South Central Los Angeles. And then if you're in the middle of nowhere, Oklahoma, you're like, well, it's probably rough neighbor. You know, you don't think police brutality is such a vague term. And then this video comes on your local news all of a sudden, and you see with your very own eyes what police brutality means. And all of a sudden you can put like a face to that name, and that's a whole different ballpark.
Blacks are not animals. They're not lizards. They're not apes. They're not gorillas any more than any of us are. They're human beings. The first way to open the door to brutalizing people in any place is to cheapen their worth as human beings. And when I read the transcripts of the conversation, I was appalled. But the ability to freely converse in racist terminology suggests a level of tolerance for that kind of discussion that is unacceptable by any standard of decency.
See, and that's my whole deal is like, I don't even think race would even factor into it. I just think low income, because you see that happen. Poor. You see that happen in other countries. You ever see videos of cops in Brazil? Oh my God. Mm-hmm. They pull people over, they shoot their guns, they go, all right, you could take off, and then they pull out a gun and shoot their car.
Well, to your point, I think the conversation is about race a lot because there is a statistical Well, there's a statistical skewing of lower income and in minorities, so that oftentimes the Venn diagram overlaps a lot bigger there. But to your point, this violence is happening in low income neighborhoods
all across the world. And unfortunately, when you are under a certain poverty line, like we've brought up several times on this
show,
you
can't afford a lawyer.
Yeah, you can't afford a lawyer. And unfortunately, to the majority, you don't matter. And that is the worst message anybody in a neighborhood like that can receive.
Okay, my statement will be very brief. And what we will attempt to do is answer questions that you might have regarding the two meetings which took place this morning. The first meeting was with the district attorney, Vanderkamp, and the second meeting, of course, was with Chief Gates. Beyond that, we raised a number of other issues which dealt with such things as their attitudes and position on police review board, on the use of alternative weapons, value system, the system of evaluating the officers, implementation of policies, and what they do about officers who are involved in repeated use of the gun. We indicated our strong feeling that our community is still grieved, is still has a feeling that, again, the violation of human life and the low value that this society sometimes attempts to place on black life has occurred again, and that also this is a pattern of an escalated kind of behavior here in the Los Angeles community and within this country as a whole.
And going back to the generation thing, what I was telling you guys about, each generation has to work to get their spawn or their next generation on the next level. The crack epidemic took them out by the knees. They have generations of African-American and minorities in those neighborhoods 30 years later that haven't moved an inch.
And that are still hooked on
that
crack.
That are still on that. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like, so when you talk about like the poverty level, it's like you can't get out of the poverty level because you are actually in a situation where nobody could. And back to the cops, when we're talking about that, as a human being, if you're trying to get someone to not do something, that's going to upset you. Right. And this is what something people have to understand. If you're like, hey, to your spouse, your wife, whatever, don't cheat on me. And they're like, I won't, whatever. And then they do it. Right. They're banging someone right in front of you. You're going to lose your fucking mind and you're going to attack. You go to a different level. And that's where these police officers got at this point. Do not do this. I don't give a fuck. So they go to that level from 0 to 100 and they beat innocent people because so many other times the non-innocent people, right, didn't give a fuck. Don't sell drugs. I'm going to sell to this guy right in front of your face. Fuck you. You mean nothing to me. That's the attitude that they've been living with in these neighborhoods. So from them to go to an excessive force type of way, when we said it's taught to them, It's almost not just taught, it's egged on. Like, it's like, you need to go here.
Yeah.
Or
this is the
what's
only
the point
way
of you even being here? I'll spit in your face. You better hit me back or you'll have no respect for
right.
me.
This is the only
this is
way.
The only way.
This isn't the type of job you can have where you have to wait for something to happen and then get a call and go to it. They go out there and actively pursue their job. They go out looking for gang members. They go out looking for guns. They go out looking for people having fights and shootings and stabbings. And they know the area. And they get excited about what they're doing. I like to see that in all policemen, but especially the policemen that work crash.
And what's a good night for them?
A good night for them as far as arrest goes and so forth? Oh, they love getting guns. They love taking people off with guns. They just say that's to them, that's the biggest thrill there is.
Well, because it's the only way that in their culture they earn respect.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't get.
But that's part of this game.
You don't get to hold the. You don't get to name yourself part of the gang until you're beat up by everyone.
But
in the gang.
The funny thing is, though, is that the things that the overcompensations that we have in both sides, the cops and the hoodlums and stuff like that, like and the gangs, the overcompensation on both have hurt each other. Have hurt themselves more than anybody. The cops overdo it with the beatings. Well, now all of a sudden, the public is like, "Yo, what the fuck is that?" They're screaming at him now. Now you have white America yelling at them over the Rodney King video. That's the thing. When that Rodney King video happened, it sparked people's minds. All of a sudden, white America was, their eyes were open. Oh, wait a minute. NWA is making sense. That's right. Fuck the police. If I were in that neighborhood, fuck them.
Now you had a unique perspective being on the inside of what's considered one of the most corrupt police departments in the country. Now, were you outspoken? Did you see any corruption while you were on the inside?
Most definitely, I did see it, and I was also a part of it, and also a participant of being part of the system at one time in my life. It's a moment where, you know, I'm not proud of to talk about it, but I talk about it because I believe that there is an atonement that needs to be done by people to recognize and to deal with societal issues that, you know, isn't just, you know, on one person, okay, but rather a issue that is systemic and that's been going around for a long time. And so for me, I did witness acts of police brutality. I also participated in it. You know, I stand here, you know, naked in my own truth of what I know, what I saw. And hopefully not to be demonized, but you know, to discuss an issue that right now is a topic of great conversation within our country.
It's the same thing that happened when Emmett Till, when he got killed. The story of Emmett Till
on the front page of newspapers all across the country.
The story of Emmett Till is he made a pass at a white woman. White woman told some men. Emmett Till's 13 years old. The men find him, kill him brutally, and beat him. And his mom decided to put his open casket, and they had a photographer take a picture of him, put that on the newspaper, and that's when everything started to change. Because now all of a sudden, white America is going, that could have been my son. That could have been my kid. So, and that's what happened with Rodney King. It's like now all of a sudden, when that made national news, white America all of a sudden opened their eyes.
Well, and here's the thing that people will never understand about those less fortunate. If you come from six generations of poverty and crack addicts, you do not know that there's other options. We say to them, there's other options. You have other options. No, I don't. Guess what? My grandma was on crack. My mom's on crack. I just had to start selling crack because my mom's too cracked out to give us food anymore. And I got three little sisters to take care of.
And the mom and grandmother have been telling you, you'll never get out of this your entire life.
And anytime you do, they look, what do you think? You're better than me? Because they're sick. They're sick and they're addicts. And then a cop comes along and says, you can't sell crack anymore or I'm going to take you to jail. And then now your little sisters have no way to eat, nobody to take care of them.
And they have to be prostitutes.
And they have to be prostitutes. And it's this never...
The survival.
It's this vicious, disgusting cycle that... And what we don't understand in our criminal justice system is offering punishment without rehabilitation only bolsters criminals. It only makes them braver. It only makes them more violent because what they know is that their life is going to be worse on the other side of jail time. They're going to have less of a stronghold on their life. They're going to have no way to get income. They're going to lose any potential of having a legitimate life. So now we have no rehabilitation system. We only have a punishment system. So what incentive do I have in my crack-riddled neighborhood to do anything but become the biggest, baddest crack dealer on my block?
It's a shot at the cop who basically are out of control. It's not, you know, when I do the song, I make sure I say, yo, there's some good cops out there. You know, I ain't gonna lie, but there's cops out there that are using their badge to fill up their insecurities that they've had ever since they were a little punk kid, and they became a cop just in order to do that. And they take those badges and they try to play God with them. You know, cops don't go to jail for murder. We do. You know, they get laid off.
I've been in fear of the cops for ever since I can remember, even being a little kid. One time, these cops pulled up, like five cops pulled up on us when we were like 11 years old and pulled guns on us.
Black fear and hatred of LA police was expressed most boldly by the rap group NWA in its notorious but apparently not inaccurate track, F the Police.
But the origin story is that the decision was made by those dealers to dismantle their own neighborhoods. The decision was made for them to get profit by creating a war zone for their innocent, poverty-stricken neighbors and friends. The police are victims here as well, because they have to try to figure that out. And that's
they don't have resources. They don't have funding. They don't have the only resource they have is weapons.
I just said it. We can bring the military in and make it a war zone and close off the entire area. It would just spread west and east.
Yeah.
The decision, the origin that was made to dismantle generations of people for profit. And again, this is profit that everybody knows is destructive. That decision is what held back these neighborhoods. That decision, whoever started it, and I'm not saying any conspiracy theories of who did it or who didn't, whoever started it, this is the end result of it right now. And yeah, the streets were burning because of this, but Rodney King was the catalyst to be like, just put him in handcuffs and put him in a car. Why the fuck?
You got to beat him like
that. How did it get here? How the fuck did it get here?
Cops out there feel that they got a license to kill anyway. And, a beat down just goes with the program. Yeah. Well, I could tell you at least 10 to 15 different isolated incidents. They just weren't caught on camera. Just me being a brother. I remember one time I was just crossing the street in California and the police just jumped off on the megaphone was saying, hey, don't you know where you at? Boy, damn near something like that. And I looked at them. But then I realized where I was, and I just kept stepping.
It's poverty. If poverty wants to feed off poverty and kill itself, it's never going to solve itself. You know, that's just the way it is. If you want to get out and help a community, if someone came in there with a different opportunity, said, hey, guys, I'm going to give you guys all computers here on the street corner, that would be the richest neighborhood in the fucking world right now. But that's not what it was. It was like, I'll kill all you motherfuckers so I can get ahead. That mentality is what destroyed those neighborhoods and those generations.
What is needed is a very large show of force. And the LAPD is not all that large, but we now have all of these departments, plus the National Guard. We have now the resources, the manpower, to go into the street and secure them. And they have to be secured, because people have to be able to go about their lives in a normal manner. More than anything else, that's what has to happen. I just saw something earlier on television this morning where there was a grandmother with her grandchild who's in a wheelchair, and she is trapped inside her house, trapped there because they are afraid to leave because of all the rioting in that neighborhood. That's the reality of what is happening in this community because of these thugs and these criminals and these arsonists that are going through the streets, making it impossible to live in a civilized community.
And on top of that, too, you're not just talking about one guy who goes, I'll kill all you motherfuckers. It's a lot of guys saying, I'll kill all you motherfuckers.
450 active gangs. So there's a lot of teams saying, let's kill our neighborhood so we don't have to be a part of this fucking system. And oh well.
Everybody spoke, all these doctors and stuff, and they said, Ice-T, why are there gangs and drugs, you know? I said, all you fools sitting in here and gonna ask me, and you know exactly why there's gangs and drugs, because you don't care about it, you know what I'm saying? And the gang situation in Los Angeles has been here 20 years, and then a lady got killed in Westwood, you know, a non-black, somebody out of the neighborhood, and all of a sudden there were 387 murders that year and 70,000 gang members. And I said, they didn't join that night.
Because that's what they saw. You know, their older brother died because of that system. You know, their friend who was on the way out, who was getting straight A's and was going to get a scholarship, got shot in the face.
Got
just
shot
yesterday.
In the face. And then somebody, and then his buddy went and shot the guy that killed the brother. Now, all of a sudden, I have a loyalty to that guy.
Yep. The culture of ignorance does not create victims. That's all I'm saying. If you buy into the ignorance, you are not a victim. Unfortunately, nobody showed you something else, but you're not a victim. You're part of the problem. If someone's teaching you racism and you're going out there and preaching racism, you're not a victim. You're part of the problem.
Yeah.
Police Daryl Gates having now decided on a dawn to dusk curfew over the entire city of Los Angeles, with Compton officials having decided to put a curfew in effect there, possibly with Inglewood officials putting into effect a dawn to dusk curfew. I think for a lot of the people who are out now, as Hal remarked earlier, in this somewhat festive nature, this is going to come to a crashing halt, because people are going to be in some serious danger.
There went a window out of a highway patrol car, just had a brick thrown through it.
There's going to be some serious danger on the streets for people who are out after the curfew hour. I think this is going to come to a crashing halt about that time.
Well, I think it may gain, may come to a halt, Larry, even sooner. I have a report that the National Guard has been deployed. The number that number of troops will be 2,000, but 850 are already moving into position. And I think what you're going to see, just judging by this kind, it's going to be a military operation.
Yes.
And it's going to move in, I think, with overwhelming force. I think the strategy now, as we've been seeing it, is just to get these people out. They're not interested in arresting, except if there's real serious personal injury or violation. And I think then the National Guard will move in at a combined operation with the LAPD, sheriffs, highway patrol, and state police. And I think they'll try to gain control that way by sheer force of arms.
So if each generation wants to keep passing on the crack, selling and this and that to their brother and their sister and their mother and doing that, they're not victims. They're the problem. Okay? And if cops want to
keep beating people up for play no by reason.
If cops want to, as we mentioned,
fight fire with fire.
Yeah. Not beat them and join them. They're part of the problem. Mm-hmm. And the thing is that badge represents honor, loyalty, and trust. Drug dealers don't wear that fucking badge.
No honor amongst thieves.
The videotaped beating of Rodney King had left many Los Angeles residents outraged.
It was like the first time we had actually seen it. So it was shocking, but at the same time, it was wonderful, because now we Americans, we African Americans, we had evidence of our claims of, you know, injustice and mistreatment.
The idea of watching that video originally, give me your reaction to when you saw the Rodney King video. Give me what you felt initially.
I was waiting for somebody to stop it. And the fact that no one came and no one was able to stop it. The Rodney King video in and of itself ignited a culture of wanting to get involved.
With the trial date set against the officers involved and the Rampart Division in full-scale war with its citizens, the outcome of the trial would force the LAPD and the crash team to become soldiers. An 18-year stalemate that would ignite the district in flames.
There was no way that these officers could not be held responsible for their action. There's no way they could be acquitted. Now we would certainly see justice being done.
We, the jury, find the defendants not guilty.
When the officers were acquitted, it literally said that you could beat a black man in the street, the world could see it, and yet it made no difference. So it was more than a betrayal. The message it sent, what it said to me was, as that I was worthless.
Co-host Brandon Hahn on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Mr. Hahn Comedy. Jocelyn Sharp on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Jocelyn Sharp. And Sylvia Alvarado on Twitter and Instagram at It's the Sylvia. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Rise to Offend and on Instagram at Rise to Offend Official. And make sure to listen to us every Monday on the Metal Sucks podcast on metalsucks.net. Email us comments, questions, errors we may have made, or any figure you would like us to cover, risetooffend@gmail.com. Discover documentaries and news segments on the corruption and rampart scandals associated with the LAPD crash team and the changes made after the fallout. Invest the time and effort to view the art created after the scandal, including many feature films and the hit television show The Shield, available on many different streaming platforms and YouTube channels. All content on this show is copyrighted by its owners. Thank you all so much for the reviews on iTunes. These 5-star reviews are helping this show grow, and is all we can ask from you guys. Please, if you listen to the show and appreciate all the hard effort behind it, review the show on iTunes for us. It truly means the world that you take the time to listen and to review the show. Until next week, repeat offenders. RTO Podcast, signing off.